Hey, thanks so much for listening to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. This is Doc Danny Matei, and I got a quick announcement for you, and it is about our Gym PT Blueprint program that we have been working so hard to revamp and update over the last few months. If you've already gotten that program, you're going to get access to all the updated modules that will come out in the middle of May. And if you haven't, I've got a special announcement with this program that we are adding as we open it back up, and that is that we are adding a two-day live component to this for everyone that signs up for the program when we open it back up. Now, this is something that we've never done before for this program. We've only had live events with our mastermind group alone, but with this, our goal is to get you the best result that we possibly can when you're starting your own practice within a gym, or if you've just started a practice within a gym and you haven't scaled it up past $5,000 to $10,000 a month in revenue. This is going to be the most kind of specific and ideal program that we could put together for you to help achieve that goal. So if you are interested in starting a cash practice in the gym, you have a cash practice in a gym and you're trying to scale it up to $5,000 to $10,000 plus a month in revenue, and you want a defined kind of repeatable system that you can plug in, as well as help from myself and all of my business partners in person for a couple days to really dig into your business and make sure that you are implementing the right things, head to physicaltherapybiz.com/live to get on the wait list for the updates for this program. Because it is going to have an in-person component, we're going to have to significantly limit the number of people that we can work with, but the goal is to get those people a significantly better result than just opening it up to everybody without this kind of hand-holding of this live event with me and my team. So if you want to work with me and my team, you want to get access to this awesome program that's going to come out in May, head to physicaltherapybiz.com/live just to get on the wait list of information coming out about what it actually includes, when it is, everything that you need. Head there and get signed up. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's up, guys? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. And today, I'm fortunate enough to have two people that I think may have one of the faster growing cash practices that I've learned about in the in the few years that I've been doing this podcast. I feel like I really had to get them on. It's Nicole and Jesse Cozine. They own Pelvic Sanity out in Laguna Hills, California. And as of now, they have there's four providers. They've been in this for, I think, 3 years, correct?
Yes, we just had our 3 year anniversary.
Which is incredible growth. I think it's, you know, something that's, it's just cool for other providers to hear this. I think a lot of people listen to this they're lurking, they're thinking about starting a practice. Maybe they're in the side hustle kind of, portion of their business where they're still, you know, working another job and they haven't decided to kind of take the leap yet. And so I think this should be like really motivating for them to kind of hear a story of somebody that in a short period of time has really, built a really impressive business. So first of all, I just want to give you guys an opportunity to jump on and tell us a little bit about your practice as it kind of stands right now.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, thanks for having us on. We're really excited to be here. So we have, like you said, cash practice in Orange County, California. Right now, we just hired our fourth physical therapist, and including me, makes five. So we have five PTs. We have a massage therapist. We hired a front desk person, like 6 months back or so. And before that, Jesse was doing all of it. Is an interesting, I think we learned a ton from that. Yeah. We can get into that in a second. But so that's kind of how we stand right now. We've already had to expand our space, which was a little bit interesting because we couldn't actually expand physically in the current space that we have. Huh. So we rented a space in the same building and have a little gym back there for our exercise stuff and our mindfulness classes. And so we've been really able to kind of grow and offer a lot of cool opportunities for our patients to get back to better pelvic health.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. I mean, everything you just mentioned, right? So like massage, mindfulness, exercise, physical therapy is this sort of like kind of holistic approach, holistic center that you're developing, which I think is just so, it's so beneficial. And it also goes so well with the handoff to the right people too, you know, and sometimes that's the hardest part. It's like, you know, okay, yeah, we're kind of done with this side of it, but I keep sending people to trainers that are sort of inadequate and they're kind of screwing up what we work so hard on. And then it's like, all right, well now I got to build that and then bring it on. So it seems like you guys have done a really good job of that. I'd love to kind of hear about like how this started. So why did you start it and how did that begin?
Yeah. So it's actually really interesting. So Jesse always was pushing me to kind of do my own thing. And I was always like, I'm not a business person. I don't want to do that. Like I knew myself enough to know like, hell no, I am not going to sit there and crunch numbers and be all nerdy with that. Like that doesn't do it for me, right? Like I'm a physical therapist. I want to treat patients. So, but he is a little bit more that like business entrepreneurial stat, comes from a family of that does that. And so I think that he never really even thought twice about not doing that.
Yeah.
So I started it at a hospital based setting. So I've seen how that works. We tried to, I grew that, thing at Hoag Hospital for 5 years. And then I went to work for a smaller place, basically like this one, from a person who had also broken off from a hospital-based clinic. And that was a really cool symbiotic relationship as well. And I was the clinical director there for about 5 years. And then we decided to break off and do our own thing. However, it actually never really was going to be a physical place. This actually, Pelvic Sanity actually started as a blog that actually didn't really do very well, honestly. Yeah. And we never really like, I was always like, yeah, I got to start writing my thoughts down from a pelvic health standpoint. And like Jesse was like, well, let's start a blog. And we had an idea to write a book. And so that was sort of all in the works. And then through a series of events at the current, at the place where I was working, I was just like, you know what? I wasn't 100% happy. And I was like, let's do it. And we had basically like this big family planning session where we were like, okay, are we going to have kids? Yes or no? We decided yes, but we also decided that we wanted to be really happy with our lives when we started to go do that. And so we basically kind of just sat down kind of with my parents and stuff. And we're like, you're moving down to Orange County. Like, we're going to start this practice and see where it goes. Cause if we don't do it now, we're not going to be able to do it as well as we want to probably for the next like 10 years. And my parents were like laughing at us. They're like, if you don't do it now, you're never going to do it.
Yeah.
So we kind of like had this big, like life planning kind of session. And then we were like, okay, go. And that was in like November, December. And then we opened in technically April, but we have this location starting in May.
Wow.
So it was actually really fast, for that part, but not necessarily in like we pre-planned for a really long time.
Well, it seems like you guys are just intentional. I would say, I mean, mm-hmm. I've never sat down with my wife. We did not do this before we started practice and thought to ourselves, what kind of life do we want? You know, like where do we want to be whenever we have kids? We just had a kid, you know, and then we had another kid. I think that's amazing. No, you guys maybe it's like a California cool thing. Like my friends that live in California, Southern California in particular, they're just cooler than me. They seem to have their shit together better than I do. And I don't know if maybe you guys are just exposed to more of that sort of like intentional kind of living and self-perspective of where you want to be. And I think it's great. I'd be sure to hear, Jesse, it's interesting. Like, so you grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. So for you, like the risk side of it is just normal. Do you find it like, I know for most of us when we get into it, it's like, dude, this is crazy. I can't believe I don't have a paycheck. But for you, I mean, that's just kind of the way your family was, huh?
Yeah, that really is. And then I had been consulting, which is kind of what led me to actually come be able to be at the clinic, because I had been working from home and consulting with small companies. So this was right in my wheelhouse. So if you're not scared, you're not doing something right, right? That's true. And I had just seen for so long Nicole frustrated in not being able to provide the kind of care that she wanted. Because we first started dating, she was, you know, running the program at Hoag Hospital and, you know, stuck in that insurance mindset and all of that and how frustrating that was from the patient care side. And then even moving over to a private practice, it just wasn't providing the kind of care that she wanted to be able to provide for people. So, yeah. You know, she would come home just so frustrated by various things going on. It's like, you know, you have such strong opinions on how people should be treated, on how you want this to run. And she was always so proactive about doing that wherever she was. I said, well, if you can't turn off the care button, you know, you're doing all of that work for somebody else.
Yeah.
So why not do all that work for us?
Yeah. Right? And that was actually an interesting like thing where he was like, you're either going to have to decide to just shut off and not care and not give a F about anything.
So you can curse on this podcast, by the way. Totally fine.
Oh, okay. Then you don't give a fuck about that. Because he was like, I can't have you continue to come home and be super frustrated about stuff and then not be able to like actually make the changes.
Yeah.
And so that was what really was kind of like, oh gosh, like big, like epiphany, like, okay, maybe I can. And then I was like, well, you're going to have to help me then. And then we had to have the discussion of, are we going to be able to like work together?
Yeah.
Because we think we can, but when you actually do it, I mean, that's a whole nother ball game. So,
but
it's worked out really well. We haven't gotten divorced yet. So that's great.
Right. You guys are doing a podcast.
Still together.
Check that box. You know, the thing that I find interesting, and I'd love to see hear your opinion on this, Jesse, having consulted with other companies and just looking at, you know, the practice that you have, but also I would say in the generalization of the profession, in terms of how grossly we undervalue what we do, you know, like you not being associated with clinical care whatsoever, I think is actually an incredibly important kind of perspective to have. What did you notice with, maybe it was mindset, maybe it was, you know, certain things that you noticed with other business owners that were very apparent within the practice that you were like, dude, we have to improve this. And I've seen this in other businesses. Is there anything you noticed that was similar?
Yeah. So I think that was a real advantage for us is that, you know, coming into it from a business background with no understanding of your PT profession, not having been through PT school, I was questioning everything when Nicole would say, hey, this is what we want to do. And why are we doing it that way?
Right.
And, you know, a lot of times there's a great reason. And a lot of times that's actually, so one of the things I really noticed is that insurance-based mindset has just crept into everything in the PT profession. Like everything is geared toward that, you know, get people in the door and get them back out. And you can't have somebody who's here for a long time. If there's something else going on, we got to refer them out immediately back to their doctor. And it's like, well, their doctor is the one who missed this and has been messing this up for years. Why are we sending them, you know, right back to the same person who screwed them up in the first place?
At least
send them to a different place or do something else. So just kind of questioning a lot of that stuff. We actually went back from an EMR to a paper documentation stuff, which Nicole was so opposed to. She thought that was a huge step back. And then we sat down and said, well, what are we really documenting for? We're not sending this to an insurance company. We're not trying to justify what we're doing. So why would we, you know, spend all the time when we can develop our own paper forms that take 2 minutes to do and really work for us, as opposed to doing that for, you know, a 15-minute EMR thing that's insurance-based. So stuff like that was like really big. And then I think too, just the value, I think you hit the nail on the head with just the value of the profession. And if you look around at like other service-based folks, whether that's dentists or chiropractors or consultants or lawyers, those professions are kind of bold and in your face about what they can provide and what their value is. And they're really not ashamed or embarrassed to say, hey, this is what I'm worth. Yeah. I went to school for this many years. And, you know, I feel like PTs kind of come from that, like almost embarrassed to talk about money. You know, really difficult to talk about the value that they provide. But, you know, if we look at some of those other professions, it's like, man, lawyer has no problem telling you that, you know, hey, it's $400 an hour and your hour started 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So, you know? That's so true. They can think about answering a question for you and you're going to get a bill for time.
Yeah.
That's just like how they make their living. Right. And you're so right about that. And for you guys at this point, you've had multiple staff come on and some of them look like they're, you know, fairly newer out of school. So I feel like that same issue is probably like very, very prevalent in them. Like, how have you guys gone about helping kind of break those false beliefs and develop a better mindset around the practice and their self-worth?
Yeah. So actually right now we're kind of circling back to that. I thought I did a pretty decent job onboarding. And, you know, I think we forget sometimes as practice owners that like we can't expect our, we can expect a lot from our, from the people that work for us, but we also can't expect them to care as much and know as much about that as we do. You know, we're on all kinds of forums all the time. We're reading fuck insurance books every minute. Like, that's not, frankly, not they're not on their list, you know, it should be, and it might be required reading now, but to your point, like, that's just not in their mindset. And so we've decided deliberately to start to bring on younger, fresher physical therapists, mostly so that I can train them in the pelvic physical therapy way. But, and we sort of like, we're like, oh yeah, you're working for a cash practice. Like, here's the spiel that you need to like know that we say. But now we're going circling back. Actually, we just got away for a weekend and we kind of like did a whole, like you call a 10,000 foot view of like what's going on, what's working, what's not. And we noticed that when people are getting asked that question in the treatment room, we're not doing a great job of really talking about it in the way that we want them to talk about it. And so I was like, well, the step right before that is that's me, that's my fault. So we're circling back now and we are going to have like little weekly, little training sessions on like the fundamentally, like what is going on in the cash PT world. Why do we feel personally like that's a great way to have healthcare administered? Because I really feel like that needs to be, if not the way that they think in their personal lives, then definitely understand at least why we feel that way for the pelvic health and physical therapy world.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's such a difficult thing to break too, because I think in a lot of ways you don't really know what their upbringing was like their parents might've had a lot of issues with money. You know, they may personally have a lot. It's so hard for somebody if you hire somebody and they wouldn't be willing to go and seek out a service like that and pay for it themselves, how are they supposed to have an informed conversation with somebody that is in the same position, right? And we noticed this in particular with our office manager early on. Like, it would frustrate us a little bit. And she's like, she's amazing. She's been with us 3 years. She's just like such a great fit. But early on, it was something that we just assumed it wouldn't be hard for her to do. And, you know, actually she has some really good advice. Cause like she's a much better business owner than me. And, you know, she's like, you can't just yell at a plant to grow and it'll grow. Like, that's not how it works. Right. Like, you know, yell at the succulent to grow. And the thing is, she's right. And for me, it just came down to like breaking down the problem and then trying to develop a framework of how, you know, we can actually start to change some of that stuff. And it's so much different over, you know, a few months to a year. Like, it's amazing the difference that they'll make in their mindset. And really in a positive way going forward with their association with money. So have you guys found, you know, any of those things that, in terms of breaking that, in terms of improving their mindset that have worked really well for your company?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel like that helped a ton, and it's helping, right? We've already had our first like talk about it and stuff. And then it's like, oh, now the one thing is that we have to like also kind of like you talked about with being individualized, it's like we provide individualized care for our patients. And as business owners, we have to provide individualized, you know, feedback for our employees too. So, you know, so-and-so over here who comes from this family and whatever, she might have to have a whole different talk to a patient because it's going to be real coming from her, versus someone over here who maybe didn't come from as, you know, whatever, just a background that's different. Yeah. So they're going to have different spiels, but I think setting the foundation for really believing that we are providing a service that is not quote unquote expensive, but definitely valuable for the patient. And we can work with that patient in different ways to work with their financial situation. Then I think that that's really helpful. And we've already seen a little bit of an improvement in that, in the mindset and stuff of these, and that's really helpful. And we can only improve, you know? So,
well, yeah, it's huge. The admin side, it's because we spend a lot more time talking about that with potential patients and I'm on the training side, on the admin side too. Whereas PTs, you guys have the responsibility to be like great at what you do as well as having all of this side. So part of it too is just kind of creating that culture of as our front desk people, as our admin staff see people come through the door who have been to four other PTs, who have are flying here from Brazil, from Saudi Arabia, from India, and have been through this for 10 years, and all of a sudden they're feeling better after three visits with us. Like, that's where we really want to tell those stories as well. Mm. Not just, you know, here's the facts about Cash PT and why we think it's better and why it works. But when you actually see that on somebody's face as they walk out for the first time or have sex with their partner for the first time without paying it forever, or come back with a kid after they weren't able to have sex.
Yeah.
It's like, man, all of a sudden, like, I feel like those stories are actually such a huge part of the culture and how we connect with patients and how we can really put a face to that Cash PT mindset.
Yeah. Well, I think I would love to hear your perspective on the lessons learned from running the front desk of a women's health cash practice for a couple of years. I think that as I mean, the experience level there is like, that's thousands of conversations. And you know, so what have you found in terms of, you know, you taking that role, which is funny, because it's probably like, from what you were doing to that is so different in a lot of ways, but doing that, it might be the most important thing you could have done for the company going forward. So what did you learn with those conversations about prospective clients that really kind of tips one way or another, if they decide to kind of come in or not?
Yeah. And that's definitely true. And I would really recommend for anybody who hasn't had a chance to like get on the phone with people when they call in and just understand like where they're coming from and what their concerns are. And, you know, to be honest with you, I was definitely more of a numbers guy and not really an empathetic person and figure. But that is so important with what, when people want to call and connect. I love that thing about it being an emotional decision. Like, is this the place that feels right to me? And especially when you're dealing with, you know, embarrassing situations, you know, stuff people really don't want to talk about. They may not want to talk about with a guy.
Yeah. Then a dude answers the phone and they're like, right. What the hell?
Well, is this pelvic sanity?
Yeah. Are you sure? Yeah.
So,
and then he's so cool, because then he's just like, yes, what can we help you with? Is it urinary symptoms or something with sexual intercourse? And then he hears the crazy stories, right? And because as soon as you know that, like, if your front desk person is knowledgeable about the thing that you do, they will quickly forget if it's not like the expectation. And so I think it really helped for Jess to write the book with me, because I made him learn about the pelvic floor and what it does. And I mean, really, that's like 8 years, 10 years of me coming back home and being like, dang, that person's like pubococcygeus was on fire, you know? Wow. And he's like, what the hell's a pubococcygeus? And I'm like, look at this model. It's like, and it's decided for our life. But yeah, go ahead.
Right. So I had to figure out like what the it band was and all the rest of that stuff, which
it's actually a really funny story. So he goes, what is this it band? And I was like, do you mean that IT band? He goes, yeah, I guess. And I was like, I gotta go. I gotta go. Anyways. Good. Okay. So, but go. What lessons learned?
But yeah. You know, one of the things that we did is that we called around when we first started to basically anybody who was big in our kind of pelvic health field and talk to their front desk like we were a prospective patient. And, you know, it was just such a turnoff when you call somebody, you've gotten up your courage, you may have had this problem for a long time, you haven't been willing to address, and then you call and you get, you know, a series of numbers you got to push and a, you know, leave a message, or somebody who can't answer a single question is just like, well, do you want to schedule or not? So really one of the things that we've noticed is, A, the longer the conversation goes, the better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's connecting with them on some level, like finding out about their history. And that might take, I mean, we have phone calls at the front that are 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
You know, and just being willing to put in that time, you know, because sometimes it's the first time, honestly, that they've actually told their entire story in one go, right? They've had 10-minute sessions with their doctor. But they've never actually gotten to tell anybody their entire story. And, you know, if you can do that at the front, before they're even coming in, like, you're creating just such a connection there. I think the other thing that we've really learned is just being able to control where you want the conversation to go, you know, especially if you get that, you know, that first, everybody hates it, that first line is, do you take my insurance?
Yeah.
And being able to redirect that and, you know, get them talking about their symptoms. And one of the things we say in our training for our front desk folks is, when people call here, we either want them to come here or to wish they could come here. Mm. Right. So it's not you know, not everybody's the right fit. Not everybody honestly financially can afford it. For our perspective, like we do tell people about in-network options if they're really insurance-based. And we just let them know that if you're not seeing that benefit within the first 4 to 6 visits in those first 6 weeks, you know, don't feel like you're stuck there forever. But we really feel like with every interaction, and we say the same thing when we interview PTs, we either want somebody to work here or want to work here when they walk out the door.
Yeah.
Same thing with prospective patients, because you never know if that patient, you know, that person who called, that their sister, their best friend has a problem. Hey, I couldn't go there, but these guys were awesome. They were super knowledgeable. They were really caring. They followed up with me, you know, 3-4 weeks later and just wanted to make sure I was doing well. And from a genuine place, you know, not, it's obviously a great for business to like reach out and touch back with people. But, you know, if people can sense when you're genuine and you really want them to know, and we'll even say, you know, I hope we never hear from you again. You know, go for your in-network, go try that for 6 weeks. I really hope that you don't have to call us, but don't give up on physical therapy just because you have a bad experience there.
Yeah. It's such a good point about being helpful. And we do the same thing. In fact, like if somebody's on the fence or they don't come in, then our staff, like our office manager, she always jokes. She's like, I'm basically a PT now. She thinks she's like, I'm basically like, I
totally.
pretty much can fix things, you know, teach me how to dry needle and we're straight. So, but the the thing is like, we'll send, we have a few hundred videos on our YouTube channel we use for homework, and based on their symptoms, our office manager will send them a couple of videos and be like, hey, even if, you know, you aren't, you know, a right fit for us, like try these, and, you know, in the meantime, this should help with what you got going on. And then, you know, along the way, if, you know, if you're going somewhere else, like it should save some time regardless. And that alone, like that has probably gotten us more people to end up coming back to see us than anything that we've done. And it's really just like giving a fuck. I mean, honestly, and I think you're right. The conversation length, I've noticed the same thing. It's so interesting. And I think in a traditional practice though, they don't want that. They're like, oh, it's wasted time. Like either schedule them or next person. And it's really not good for that individual. So I think you guys have some really solid front end systems. Now once they're there, I'd love to sort of hear about how you guys have kind of orchestrated the experience people have. It seems like you have a really kind of unique brand and the way that you have your messaging. Like how much time have you spent on this is what I want our people to experience as they come through the door?
Gosh, between the two of us, like I feel like that's our entire life. And we constantly,
good.
You know, like I feel like we're every single day, like coming home with something. Gosh, we should really tweak that. Man, yeah. I said that to this person and dang, like, if someone says this, we need to do that. Now we're working on like actually like writing down all that stuff, but we basically always just came from we just want to be super helpful and we want people to have proper like expectations. So I think one of the biggest things with us is that we see people for kind of a long time sometimes, especially right. when these like chronic pain problems. So to get our PTs to also get out of that like 6 visits, 12 visits, 24 visits is like an eternity mindset. But we also want the patient to understand that like your first batch of appointments that you schedule is like us figuring you out. And then we will be able to tell you like how long this is going to take. And so from a experience standpoint, I think that we have a great blend of, and we've trained a great blend of empathy and then authority. So we are the right fit for you because of A, B, C, D. And then we also care just a shit ton about what happens next. Like we want you to come back. Like we have folders for everybody that have a cool like logo on them and stuff. And we like have information, everything that we say to them based on their diagnosis, because a lot of people don't know like what their diagnosis actually means in the pelvic health world. It's like, what's vaginismus? Like, what the hell's that? So, you know, we have like, we've created a whole bunch of cool like handouts for them. They have their little folder. They have an action plan that we help fill them. We fill out with them. We have goal setting. We have all of that like in our thing, and then we have them bring back their folder like every time. So that number one, it helps us with communication if somebody sees a different therapist, but then also I think that helps the patient have ownership over their plan of care. And they understand what we're doing and why and for how long. And if we change the plan of care, then we have a conversation with them about it. We were working on this. Now we're going to move to this because of X, Y, and Z. So I feel like just having like honest conversations with people help them to be more involved in their care. And their goals might change too. Their goals change quite a bit, right? Because a lot of times they come in with not even thinking that they can run without pissing themselves, right? Yeah. And so they are just be like, oh, I just want to be able to like lift my baby out of the thing. But like, were you a runner? Like now that that's fixed up, like what else do you want to do? You know, do you want to run a 10K? You know? So I feel like that having that conversation with them and just making sure that they know from a physical therapy standpoint, like what we're doing and why, and having that ownership. I think the folder stands for like a lot of just like patient empowerment a little bit on like what they're doing. So that's worked out really well for us.
I don't think I've ever heard of anybody like having these a folder kind of like flow like that within a practice that I've talked to. I think that's really smart. And just from an education standpoint on the front end, it's just, I mean, we take for granted, we say all this information to them and then we're just like, they got it, you know? And I used to think that, and I'm like, they don't have anything. They don't remember shit that you said. Like, yeah, I mean, I think about it. Like when I go talk to like my CPA and he's saying stuff to me within 5 minutes, I'm like, thinking about something, you know, I was like, all right, whatever, dude. I just want to pay as little taxes as legally possible. So just do that. And like, you know, so I think if we can take that mindset, for me, I always ask the same question. I'm like, okay, before you leave, tell me exactly what you're going to tell your spouse when you get home. Like what's going on? How are we going to fix it? Tell me that. And if they can't do it, then I'm like, all right, you're not going anywhere. Like stay for a second. Okay. Hold on. Here's what we're going to do. I'm interested though, also with, you guys seem like you do a really good job with retention and sort of continuity and working on things more long term versus just discharge kind of approach traditionally. And I'm sure Jesse, for you probably look at that. That's like the dumbest business model. You know, it's like you don't want to stop people from coming back if they want to come back. So how have you guys gone about structuring your business in a way that your staff understands that, but also giving people options to stay?
Yeah, that's definitely something you look at from a business side and you're saying, man, that's so inefficient. Like you look at a chiropractor model and they convince you that you need to be in there 3 times a week for the rest of your life.
Which, right.
I mean, you can debate the ethics of that all you want, but as a business side, like that's brilliant.
They're super awesome.
That's a big piece of what we want to do. And then we want to, like kind of Nicole was saying, is with our staff, I think does a great job of kind of peeling back the layers of the onion, because a lot of times by the time somebody gets to us, they've got years in of having a specific problem, right? And you know, we address the first thing that they came in for, but if they've got those underlying goals, it's like, man, how do we uncover those? How do we get them back to doing what they want to do? How do we get them back better than before if they're doing that stuff? How do we, you know, so one of the things is we kind of look at, you know, when they leave, we want to start, you can decreasing their visits, the frequency of their visits, but still make sure that they're in our system and coming back.
Yeah.
So that might be like, hey, let's schedule something for a month out. You know, you're doing great, you're symptom free, but we also know you have a history of flaring up if these things happen. What we really don't want is somebody to go out the door prematurely, just barely okay. And then 2 weeks later, they do something. And now all of a sudden, they're thinking, man, PT didn't work. I'm back to square one.
Yeah.
You know, now that's not an advocate in the community for you. That's just somebody who's like, oh, yeah, pelvic sanity, they were okay. They kind of helped me a bit, I guess.
Yeah.
And we want people who are just really comfortable in their home program. They know when to call us back when they need it. They know they can come in for a massage, for mindfulness. So kind of easing that transition out, I think, is really important, because I think that's a mistake that we see a lot with folks or who feel like, you know, they're just like cut off, and now all of a sudden like life happens, you know, you fall down, you work out too hard doing something, and you know, you feel like you're back to square one, even if that's not the case. If that person feels that way, they're not the ones who's out there in their community on Facebook telling everybody how great pelvic sanity is. You know, they're ambivalent about you. And we really want to create that advocate in the community, especially for us, where we're really working to raise awareness of this field and let people know that there's help out there for them, for both men and women with all these issues. The best way to do that is to have patients who are just out there. You know, we've had patients send probably 10 patients to us. Yeah. You know, everybody knows somebody who's dealing with something like this. So how do we make them an advocate when they leave? That's a big, big thing that we think about.
Yeah. Do you guys have a system that you've put in place for, you know, referral, marketing, or any sort of like structure in place around that? Or is it mainly, hey, we're going to fulfill like crazy. You're going to feel so good. You're not going to be able to shut up about us.
Yeah, so far it's been the latter. We just want everybody to have such a great experience. We're really thinking about right now making that a little bit more systematic, maybe offering a free massage for stuff like that.
Yeah.
We'll sometimes use Starbucks gift cards for people who are, you know, really
refer
great like
a patient.
That. But that's definitely something I think that we can get a little bit more systematic about, and I think that's a real area of growth for us.
Yeah.
Now that we actually have enough staff to
Support it. Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. And I think when you look at that, it's so funny. I had a mentor tell me most people's business, you know, lives at like a 6, 7, maybe an 8 out of 10. Like they're good enough to where, you know, you'll go, but it's not bad enough where you're going to like kind of move on to something else. And they'll just stay in business and kind of just be there. Right. Very few businesses are remarkable. Like where they're at this like 9 or 10 out of 10 with like everything that they do. And in that case, the people that have experiences with them, they literally spew their opinion on everybody about having to go see them. And it's such a positive sign whenever we see that as a business. And I know that's something for us that we've been working on recently as well. Like that's something that we just have pinpointed certain people and we've had a lot of success with even looking at like, you know, these are just clients of ours, but they might send people our way. And like a good example is one of our staff PTs, Jackie, who does women's health stuff as well. Like she kind of worked with her on things and she'd sent like 5 or 6 people our way and we're like, okay, what is she like? Like, what's she into? She's like, she really likes ice cream. So we ordered this like special, like Grater's ice cream box sent to her house. And like, she had no idea who it came from either. We did a bad job of actually like saying where it was from. And when she came in, she was like, hey, how's that ice cream? She was like, oh shit, that was you guys. And she was so excited and like, just, I guess, you know, thankful that we even knew that she liked ice cream that much. And we sent her a specific kind of thank you gift. And I think that approach, and there's probably more systemized ways to go about it, but like just thinking, man, like what is this person really like? And how can we show that we know them? Not just, you know, like, thank them for that or give them like, you know, something insignificant, but it takes a lot of time. It's actually really hard, but that's sort of the approach that we've taken. I just think it's there's so much potential if you can get that right within your own clients, you know? And for you guys, it seems like you've done a good job of it. What are your other sort of acquisition streams that you found that are working for your practice?
Yes. So just to go a little bit back to like just keeping or thanking people, we do thank you cards.
We still do
old school thank you cards. We do all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And then
we actually have a passive aggressive thank you card for doctors who have a patient who didn't refer us, who had to find out about us on their own.
Oh, wow.
So we have two different languages. One is like, hey, thank you so much for your referral. Looking forward to working with you. And then the other one is, hey, we're going to be fixing your patient. Here we are. You know, could have let them know about us a little earlier.
We'll let you know.
Dude, that's
a little
great.
More
like that,
but
I love that.
Hello, like, come on.
Dude, I used to do this. I was very aggressive early on with CrossFit gym owners. And part of it is because I was teaching the movement mobility trainer course for them. So I'm like, listen, man, here's the deal. I'm the only person on the East Coast that teaches this course. I'm in your city. If you don't send them to me and they find out that you knew about me and you didn't send them to me and then they found me in a different channel, they're going to be really pissed at you. So you might as well just send them to me. And they were like, that's a good point. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know, maybe that's a bit too aggressive, but it seemed to work at the time.
Yeah. You know what else we have? We've decided just deliberately to not specifically market to physicians anymore.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that's a common theme in this type of cash practice, but we make a very big point to specifically not. I mean, we give them like maybe once a year, like a Christmas card or like, hey, we're still here. So we definitely have touches to them. But we do not specifically try to seek those people out from a hierarchical standpoint. Now, what we will do is sometimes be like, hey, we're looking for people to refer to. Why don't you talk to me about your practice and see if it would be a good fit for our patients.
Right.
So that's sort of how we're starting to let more physicians in the area know that we're around. We have gotten actually really excitingly just a lot more people. We've just been hearing like more that people know who we are now finally. So that's been really cool. Like we'll talk to some random person and be like, oh, you're Pelvic Sanity. I heard about you from so-and-so and we don't know the person who's so-and-so, which is super cool. Yeah. But we do a lot of patient education marketing on our blog, on Instagram, and we do Facebook and Instagram ads for those kinds of things. So that's been a good patient acquisition channel that I never thought I would actually, number one, pay for, number one, pay anybody else to do. Cause I was like, what? Come on, really? Like, I'm not going to be on freaking Instagram every minute. And now I kind of am. We have to
do that.
But if what we've tracked, you know, when people say, how did you hear about us? I would say, what, wouldn't you say like 50 or 60% of it is all like either social media or Google?
Yeah.
And so it's like it's not physician referral as much anymore, which it shouldn't be. And we have direct access in California, which is helpful. But then, you know, so that's another way that we've just really, if you just provide patients good information so that you build that trust from that standpoint, then that's like the first, you know, then you have a foundation to get them as patients when something.
I think that's great. I mean, especially, so it sounds like you guys are doing primarily content marketing paid to get in front of the right people in a certain area. So are you guys following up with them in any certain way, or is it mainly just let's start building the, building the relationship with this? I know they have a badass article. People have already shared. They like it a lot. And I want to get in front of as many people as possible. Is that sort of the strategy? Or is it after that, then you're retargeting them with some other opportunity to come in and see you guys or get on the phone with one of your docs?
Yeah, we're doing some retargeting there. One thing that's been pretty successful for us is putting together online support groups. So we run an online support group called Finding Pelvic Sanity. So we've got about 500, you know, patients from across the country, across the world who are in there who are now collaborating with each other that we can kind of moderate and run, because a lot of our people end up going on these Facebook groups that are full of doom and gloom. And that's one of the first things we tell people is, you know, get off the internet, stop looking at all of the negative stuff out there, because the person who got a great PT from the beginning isn't the one who's sitting on Facebook at, you know, 3:30 on a Saturday.
But then that's really helpful to fuel the remote consultation and out-of-town program that we have. So we've seen people from like kind of a lot of places and do remote consultations too. And that's sort of that whole funnel is sort of going through that, just providing good, a positive place for people to go, and good, positive, correct information. And then we don't actually don't even advertise that much in that group that we even have that. It's just that then they just know who we are, and then they just go to the website and then we have that on there. So,
well, I think information is so powerful. You guys have already mentioned stories multiple times. Like you've said stories a couple of times. And I think that, you know, it's really one of the more powerful things, a really strong story. People remember that. And content in particular, if you can educate somebody, you know, we look at that as, I mean, we sort of have this unique skill set, but we assume it's not that different, but in a lot of ways it is. And from a Facebook or Instagram standpoint, I mean, when you look at like the numbers on that, my business partner in PT Biz, he has a digital programming company that literally is all online where they program for people that train in their garage. And he's run, I mean, he did like, it was over $200,000 in Facebook ads last year. And what he found was, you know, the best return aside from like certain campaigns that is like direct call to action. And he thought he was just building warm audiences with content ads. But when he really went back and looked at his content ads, they were, you know, returning somewhere between 50 and 100% of ad spend in people joining his program just from sending people to a blog post, no call to action whatsoever. So
right.
If you have really good content, you got to try to get that good content in front of as many relevant people, you know, that you can. And that's probably the simplest, most effective digital strategy that somebody could take without necessarily going through some of the retargeting and things like that. So obviously you guys must have really good content. How's that work with your staff members? Are they part of this as well? Or is it mainly you that's kind of putting it together?
Yeah, that's a good question. So one of our PTs works for us like about 25 to 30 patient hours a week. And then the 10 to 12, 15 other hours is social media. So she actually is in charge of our pelvic sanity Instagram page. And then I run my own at Nicole Cozine DPT. And then we have the other gals do like, we have like little mini projects that we end up promoting on that. So one of them wrote an ebook on gut health. The other one's writing another ebook on birthing positions. Yeah. So we have them create content in their downtime when they have a cancellation or a no show. Then we are having them do clinic based, projects like that, that we can end up using that content for. What else do we do?
We read a lot of stuff on our blog
posts. We've read a ton of blog stuff. And we just sort of research a ton of stuff and then just basically comment on it and what we think about it and what was good about that article, what wasn't. Jesse writes a lot of our blog stuff as well, because he's like a super good writer. It's why our book, like, actually you don't fall asleep reading it, is because of him. If I would have written it, I would have been like the worst book ever. But so he knows a lot about pelvic PT now, and then can like, and obviously he's like has a research background as well.
Yeah.
So he can like look at a research article and then like ask me about it, and we kind of collaborate on that together. So that's all of our kind of digital stuff. So right now we don't have anybody else outside doing that for us, but it is one of those things that we're kind of at the point where it's like, yikes, it's taking a lot of time. And with me being so much more busy with like managing people now at the business, like, we might have to look into how else are we going to structure that so that we can free up some time for us for more of like the business development standpoint.
Sure.
And the training stuff. So that's where kind of our growth pattern is right now. And it's challenging. It's like a different problem, like every minute, you know?
Yeah. I think the main factor is like, you guys are doing things to get people in the door. This is a mistake that I see a lot with people who are just starting, and they're just like, okay, I've got my office now, people are going to come. You know, they're like, that's not how it works. No. You'll sit in that office by yourself and be sad. Like, it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
Get out and do some things.
And like, when
it's not Field of Dreams. If you build it, they won't come.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, that's one of the things I think that, again, our different backgrounds really help with is kind of filtering your PT content through somebody who doesn't really understand the PT stuff. So.
Yeah.
In our clinic, that's me, but that's something that can really be effective. You know, really, I work with clients all the time who do that in like really technical fields.
Yeah.
You know, you think you're explaining it well, and in reality, you are so far over the head of anybody you're talking to. In our book, I actually gave Nicole an ultimatum. She could only use an anatomical term like one time, right? So it's like you get one use of the word like pubococcygeus or iliococcygeus or any of that stuff. We'll give it one, but we're not going to be like putting that in every single time because people don't care.
They care about
you know, what you can do for them, what actually impacts them. They don't care that,
the anatomy. Biomechanics of the pelvis, right? I wanted to put that in the book. I'm like, this is so important. He's like, they don't fucking care. They want to know that you can help their darn pain, you know? And I'm like, well, okay, well, there is an anatomy section in there because I am an anatomy nerd.
Yeah, that's so funny.
But yeah, so that's like, it's super helpful to have like somebody that doesn't have that PT brain to look at your content and to just look at everything with your business. So.
Well, I'm interested in your working relationship because it sounds like you guys kind of like have an interesting back and forth. It seems like you made it work well. How has that transition been? Like actually going from having these separate careers to then you guys are, you know, working together around each other and, you know, spending, you know, so much more time, not just, you know, at home or in other things like traveling or doing fun things, but also like in a business and trying to kind of chip away at making this thing work.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's helpful that, you know, in pelvic health, we have private treatment rooms.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, I mean, there's still times of the day where I have to be like, oh, hey, how was your morning? Because I don't actually see him that often, which I think has been a little bit of our saving grace. but I think that, first of all, I mean, we just like really respect each other. I mean, I think that that's like a huge piece. And even if our ideas clash ever, and sometimes they do, I just feel like we, like our foundation is so good that we each respect each other's like commitment to the business, number one, and then each respective expertise.
Right.
So we kind of just have like, I'm the ultimate put the hammer down on patient care stuff. So sometimes we deliberately take less money, or we look at something as a marketing cost versus a loss to the business. If that's going to be the thing, if we don't want to sacrifice on patient care, then we're like, okay, well, we're going to put that amount that we lose on that patient then in a marketing budget and more of like a marketing cost for us that we're deliberately taking a loss on in order to provide good service. Or sometimes it's like, no, like we can't afford to do that way. How else can we do it so that we balance patient care and the business? So I think it's always like patients first, and then we just have a pretty good separation of expertise. So that's sort of how we've done it. Would you say that's right?
Yeah, I think that's, we have pretty complementary skill sets. And I do think that when we do clash, which does happen like a lot, as I'm sure you guys know, it tends to produce a better outcome than either of our things. Yeah. Alone. And the other thing that I feel like is interesting is because we get asked that a lot, and there's a lot of husband wife teams doing stuff, and how do you work with your spouse? And it to me, honestly, I don't know. I think we're actually substantially better as a couple. Mm. I would have had a really hard time like hearing about all of her struggles, as she started up and everything else, and not being involved. That just seems so difficult to me to have her come home and say, hey, we're doing this, or hey, we lost money today because of this, and either blaming her or trying to jump in and fix that with not enough information.
Yeah.
I would have just driven me absolutely nuts if she was doing this on her own. So when people say, how do you work with your spouse? I was like, well, how do you not work with your spouse in some sense? Like, it's, that's our livelihood. That's our lives. That's, her happiness
and
level.
My passion,
Yeah, how would I not be involved that? And then if you're going to be involved, for me, it's really hard to be involved halfway, right? I either want to like know everything and have the whole problem, or you got to totally disassociate. But if you're going to come home and talk about the business, I better know about the business, all the ins and outs and everything else. So I think it really was nice that our expertise dovetailed that way. But I think regardless, it was really important for us. And that's obviously different for everybody. But just to be involved in what each other are doing is important.
I don't know. I almost couldn't even imagine not working with my spouse. There's a huge trust factor there. You're right. You're working towards the same goal. I think the only, caveat to that would be if people have the same skill sets, that would be difficult.
That'd be tough.
Very tough. And I think that in that context, it would maybe not be the best idea versus, Ashley and I, and like, it seems like you guys have just different superpowers, and that's awesome. And, I know you guys don't have kids yet at this point, but like we do, and like our kids come into our office and like seeing, it's so funny. They're like, daddy puts needles in people and mommy's the boss. That's what they tell people. Which is
what that's awesome.
Like, is that all I do? You think that's all I do?
Yes, and, actually it is.
But they do know that, who's in charge. And the other thing too is like, I've fallen into a role of, I know who's better at managing people. I know who's better at developing operations in systems within the business. And I try my hardest not to try to wreck that, even though I sort of have this like deep desire to want to rage against the machine, even if it's my own business and my wife. But I push it down, and I do that in other arenas in life. But she's just better at that than I am, and it's been awesome to see. So for you guys, I don't know, it's a common trend that I've seen. Multiple people in our mastermind, they work with their spouse, and they seem to crush it if they're on the same page. So it's cool to see what you guys are doing.
Go ahead. I do think too, it's like important for. I think the PT, you get a lot of credit. Like I'm the one who is sort of like the face of the company. Mm. But, and so Jesse, I think he does an excellent job of like letting that happen and like it's like not a competition. It's like, we're all like working towards the same goal to like better people's lives. So it just like is what it is. So I think that's also really, really helpful that you're not an arrogant prick.
well said. Well, you know, I mean,
Can't see, but she's definitely the better looking face of the business. So if we had to pick one, that's the better way to go.
She's definitely the funnier one. I'll give you that. Yeah. I mean, she, you know, it is funny. Like when you do look at certain like skill or not necessarily skills, but just like personality traits and things that inherently are, you may be better at, you tend to find those roles within it. And the other thing too, I think if you're thinking about working with your spouse or you are working with your spouse, the ultimate goal of business, in my opinion, is to really develop something that you're proud of, but also creates time and financial freedom for you and your family. Yeah. And who better to create financial and time freedom with than the person you want to spend the most time with? You know what I mean? Like, totally. Like it would suck if Ashley was working for a nonprofit still, getting paid half of what she's worth, working every weekend to do a fundraising events. And I'm like, yo, dude, let's like go paddleboarding on Wednesday. And she's like, I can't because I got to go to the office, you know? And totally. So I think that it frees up time for you to spend more meaningful time together.
Totally. Yeah. That's our thing.
Yeah. So what's the trajectory you want to see with the business? So give me, where do you guys want to be in the next like 3 to 5 years with Pelvic Sanity?
Where do we want to be? Go.
You know, that's a really tough question. We're struggling with where do we want to be in the next like 3 to 6 months? just because, you know, with how quickly we've been growing, honestly, it's exceeded any expectation that we had for our first 3-year plan.
Yeah.
You know, when we got this building, we had 3 treatment rooms in it, and we thought that was like too much.
Ridiculous.
Man, we're paying all this rent. You know, maybe we'll get a second person in that when we sign a 5-year lease to get the build out. You know, man, we're paying for all this unused space. And then, you know, 2 years later, we're reconfiguring our place to add an extra treatment room. We're renting another office, you know, down so we can have our massage therapist over there and our gym can move to give us more treatment rooms here. So for us, I think our immediate goal, and we actually just kind of set aside a weekend and went down, got a little hotel room and just actually took a huge like set of paper and wrote down kind of every aspect of the business and what we want to focus on. And really for us right now, it's optimizing everything that we've got going. So we want to really just like consolidate our gains, make every stage of what we do better. Because I loved what you were saying about, you know, a lot of businesses kind of truck along at a 7 out of 10 level. And what we want is every piece of what we do to be at that 9 to 10. But it is more work to go from 8 to 10 than it is to go from 0 to 8 on a lot of things, right?
That's true.
So we realize we are at the 8 level for everything that we're doing, but man, just a little improvement in each of those areas, bringing that from an 8 to 10 is really where we need to be. So that's really our next like 3 to 6 month goal, is to really optimize. We're bringing on another front desk person, so we'll have complete coverage. So I don't ever have to be here necessarily in person.
Yeah.
We're trying to have Nicole drop some of her hours as well, because she's still seeing almost 30 patients a week. And that's, you know, a lot with her admin burden and all the teaching she's doing.
Yeah.
So really what we want for this next season of what we're doing is just to have everything running so smoothly and perfectly. It really allows us to go in any direction that we want, whether that's helping PTs with mentoring stuff, whether that's starting a second location, whether that's really focusing more on the remote consultation program and the out-of-town clients that we have. Whatever we want to do, I don't think we necessarily know that yet, but in order to do any of that, everything has to really be running well. So that's really our next step.
Yeah, we actually pumped the brakes pretty hardcore on, because everybody was sort of being like, oh, you guys are expanding, like, oh, why don't you do a second location? And that was what prompted that like getaway weekend to be like, is that what we really want? Like, let's hold up, because we have to make sure that we're not just like getting caught in the snowball. It's an awesome snowball to be on, but like we have to still like control when that happens, and then just to know like we don't want to spread ourselves too thin and all that stuff. So we tried and we came back and we're like, yeah, we're not going to start a second clinic right now. And everybody was like, oh, why not? You guys are freaking busting at the seams. And we're like, yeah, you don't fucking know anything actually about the inner workings of this place. So
yeah.
Calm down. So, but I think it's really important to just like, to not get so involved in like the trajectory and like the momentum, that sometimes you have to be okay with pumping the brakes and really optimizing what you're currently doing, so that then it will free up a bunch of time to do whatever else.
I love that that's the direction you guys are going. I read a book called Small Giants that it was about maybe a year ago that really it talks a lot about what you're talking about currently.
Yeah, we're reading it right now because you said that. So
oh, I did. Okay, that's right. We talked. Yeah. So being intentional about like focusing on being great instead of big. And I think it's easy, especially when you get around other entrepreneurs and they're like, oh, we had a, 35% growth year over year or whatever. And like, we've expanded to now we've got like, whatever, 20 employees and we had 15 last month or whatever it is. But with it's a vanity number, these gross revenue numbers, the size of the company, and it's like, and then it starts to really dictate what you end up doing outside of the business. When in actuality, I mean, if you really look at this entity, you've gone out on your own to develop this entity that allows you to live outside of it and impact people in a way that you want to live this very unique life. And not letting it take over your life can be really hard, because I've been in the same position where we're like, all right, we're going to expand to another location. And I've had people offer to, basically buy our practice and franchise it. And I'm like, dude, I don't want that. Like, I'm not interested in it, I mean, money's not a driving factor for me. And I think finding out like what is like for me, it's about impact and it's about achievement. Like, I just like to move on to the next thing. And that doesn't necessarily have to be more, but better is definitely an achievement. So I love the fact that you guys are going that route. I think it's so similar to kind of what we're doing. And it's cool to hear that, because for the most part, people are just like, I want to have like 10 locations. It's like, why? Like what for?
Why? You know? I think that's a big question, right? Because we're already making, we're making like from a gross revenue standpoint, we're making way more money than we ever thought we could. Right. And so now it's like, ooh, this is kind of cool. Now we can decide, make a deliberate decision about how we're going to reinvest that into our either business or our lives or both, or back into the PTs that we have, or like, what are we actually doing and who do we want to impact the most? And I think if you keep patients at the forefront, and now we feel very responsible for our employees too. Oh, we want to make them have like the best like experience, the best life. Like, so we're excited now to like be able to actually decide what to do instead of just, meet the next goal.
Well, and with the next steps too, like our roles are changing so much. So from the outside, it kind of seems like, oh, you must be doing the same thing. Like, oh, you've been there for 3 years. And it's like, well, no, like Nicole is moving so much more into the, how do I train our people well? You know, that matters so much more than at the very beginning when it was just us, in this big empty room and she was the only person treating. Like, what she does on a day-to-day basis is completely different than it was 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's becoming the same for me as well, as I'm doing more, training of our front staff and overseeing stuff. And so some of that's just figuring out like, hey, what part of that do we love? What part of that do we not like and want to do less of? Mm-hmm. Because it's just constantly in motion too. So I think that's another piece that as you grow, and again, always awesome problems to have, but figuring out what of those new responsibilities like you really enjoy, what are you really good at, and what of those would you want to get off your plate, and where do we really want to focus going forward. So Nicole is like an awesome teacher. She's done a lot of continuing education courses. She's flying to Australia to teach some stuff over there, and maybe that ends up being something that's really becomes a bigger part of what she does. That was again part of that like, hey, let's pump the brakes and actually stop and think about like, what part of this do we enjoy?
Yeah.
And how do we do more of that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool, man. I mean, I have a mentor that is, he's just funny, like, the way he says stuff. He's like, being like true wealth is being able to hang out with the people that you like, do the shit that you actually enjoy, and have flexibility and say over what you do on a day-to-day basis. And his view of being rich is basically being able to order an appetizer at a restaurant. Like, that was like his, like, dude, I knew I made it when I could order an appetizer at a restaurant and not get water. Like, that was, and this guy's worth a lot of money. And I started laughing. I was like, dude, we never ordered an appetizer when I was a kid. Like, and if I tried to get like sweet tea or something like that, I would have been knocked over out of my seat by both my parents, probably. You know what I mean? So it's just funny with perspective of like, what do you want? What's wealth? What's success? Like, it's so subjective. It's so individual. So you guys seem like you have your shit together. It's awesome. So where can people learn more about what you're doing? Check out the practice. Maybe reach out to you. If they want to engage on anything after listening to the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Our website is pelvicsanity.com. We are on Instagram at pelvicsanity. I'm on Instagram at Nicole Cozine DPT. You can email at Nicole@pelvicsanity.com. And We love to hear from everybody. So if anybody has any questions, we're kind of open books about it. Cool. So yeah, we'd love to connect.
This has been awesome. I just want to thank you guys for your time. I mean, I know you're busy. You got a lot of stuff going on, and having an hour to be able to kind of chat with you guys and learn a little bit more about your business. And not, no exaggeration, definitely one of my favorite podcasts that I've done, you know, in the last few years. So anyway, this has been a lot of fun. I think people are really going to enjoy it. And I just want to say, you know, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for coming on. And guys, I hope you like this as much as I do. Feel free to reach out to me, to reach out to them. And hopefully this inspires you too. Like if it's not just women's health, it's a niche. Like if you have a niche and a desire to want to be the world's greatest, whatever, you know, women's health PT, golf PT, whatever practitioner, you know, you might be, like, strive to do that. And then your business, you know, will grow with you and you'll have success. So as always, guys, thanks for listening to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. And we'll catch you next time. You want more cash PT biz help? If so, go get a copy of my book, Fuck Insurance. It's your playbook to successful performance PT practice and never having to deal with insurance again. You can get a free copy at finsurancebook.com. That's finsurancebook.com. Inside this book, you'll learn the direct techniques that we have used to become one of the fastest 100% cash PT practices in the country.